Welcome to Agents of Smooch. We are continuing our romance and action series with a very recent movie from 2023, Ghosted, starring Chris Evans and Ana de Armas. Ghosted starts as a rom-com and morphs into a spy, not a spy, action movie. I am director of Smooch, Annette Weirstra, and for this mission, I am joined by Agent Deb Stanish. Hello, Deb.
Hey, let's talk about a movie that is oh so problematic, but too much fun.
I know. And it's not exactly a beloved movie by everyone, which is really interesting. It seems like the critics did not love this movie and some people didn't. But I thought it was fun.
Well, fooey on them.
Yeah. So we have Chris Evans playing Farmer Cole, who has a very quiet and sedate life living and working with his family, while Ana de Armas is Sadie, an international spy. I kind of like the premise. It starts with them meeting up, having this perfect day-long date, and Cole is like spiraling up because Sadie is totally not returning his calls or texts, and he's ghosted. So he very problematically gets a little stalkery and ends up going to London to find her and gets caught up in spy world, which is Sadie's world. So it is not a very, very not problematic. It's problematic.
Like, if you're looking at this as a template for finding your romantic future partner, like, don't. Yes. Just like, yes. Don't. This can don't do only this. Happen on television because he is so creepy. Like, obviously, it's Chris Evans. And, you know, realistically, it's Chris Evans. Like, hit me with a fish. I'm good with it. But
exactly. I think him being Chris Evans buys a lot of pass for some of the things. If he wasn't Chris Evans,
the fact that he is broken up from his previous girlfriend, who he's kind of in mourning of that relationship because, you know, he was too needy, and he starts this relationship out being way too needy. I mean, it's a meet cute like we have in a traditional rom-com where she's coming to buy a plant and he's selling her the plant, even though it's not his. It's not his stand. He jumps over. He's helping somebody at a farmer's market. And then he's, you know, got this conscience of like, I love plants. I can't sell you this plant if I know you're going to neglect the plant. So they have like this kind of little argument. And, you know, he's like, a cactus would work better for you. You can really neglect a cactus. She gets very offended. And why she agrees to go on, like spend the day with him, I don't understand that, but I'm going with it, right? Because mm-hmm. It's Chris Evans. Like I said, hit me with a fish. Like, sure, get in my car. And they have a lovely day. They have this like perfect romantic day where they get to know each other and they talk and they tour the city and they see amazing things. And it culminates with apparently some really good sex. And then it gets weird.
Yes. It's like almost like you're in a very different movie in that first 30 minutes or so.
And in the last hour, it's like there's just a little middle bit where you're like, can we just throw that part out? Like, that's problematic.
Yes. They have good chemistry when they are finally on the date, mm-hmm. I think. And it's like, it is a very nice date. And I do quite like the sex scene. I think it's quite soft. You don't see a lot. There's like floating sheets and nice soft lighting. And it's like, that's nice.
It is nice. It's like the idealized version of a sex scene. Like there's,
yes,
it's not messy. There's no fluids. Like it's all good. Like it's like the sex scene of your dreams, right? You know, it's like how you would like this to be.
Yeah.
It's very, and it's two amazingly attractive leads who I think do have chemistry. Other people don't, but I do think that they have chemistry. Like, it's just, it's a great date. Like, I was rooting for these cool kids.
Yeah. I would like to go on a date like that sometime. Art galleries and
it's just beautiful, like eating good things and just, yeah, it's like, it's a good date. But then, you know, she ghosts him for a couple reasons, mostly because she's a spy and she's on a mission. Like, he doesn't know that, but he does that thing where, you know, well, I texted her like, you know, this is great. And then he just can't stop. He just can't let it go. And he just mm-hmm. keeps texting. And it goes from, you know, maybe this has a possibility of we should do this again to, oh my God, get a restraining order. Because this guy is And his whole family, like his sister thinks she's like way creepy as he's like telling her about it. And they're all talking about like how many texts he sent. And he's always running and looking at his phone. Like it's, you know, you definitely see his like, but we had such chemistry. Like this was it. I really felt like she was the one. Like, why isn't she answering? He's getting increasingly desperate. And you're just thinking, I'm really feeling uncomfortable here. Like just even watching this as a woman, like I would. I don't like this part. I don't like this part at all because it is incredibly uncomfortable. And then he takes it to the next level.
Because it's getting into that trope of the, because he is Chris Evans, but I think he's still playing that role of the nerdy nice guy who is like into farming and wants to write a book. He's just too handsome.
He wears cozy clothes. He wears cozy clothes.
Yeah. And that's such a trope where it's just if you're the persistent nerd, eventually the girl will eventually realize that you're worth being with. And that's kind of what it's doing. And that persistence is so problematic. And yeah, like you say, then he, for some reason, he has a tracker on his inhaler. Asthma puffer, inhaler, yep. And can track her down and decides to get on a plane and go see her. And I get it because there has to be a way we get him out of where he is to where she is. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think of like, how else could we have done this in a way that was like a little less like he's a stalker?
There's no way. He's literally stalking her. This is like everybody who thinks, you know, like that scene with John Cusack holding the big boombox above his head. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
so problematic.
My God, the big romantic gesture, you know, kind of thing. Like, no, it's just weird and creepy. But let's forget about that because then it gets good again. If we could just like cut that out, we'll just forget that doesn't exist. We're going for the ride.
I was talking about it with Erica and she said, hanging a lantern on the stalking parts does not make it less stalkery. And I do agree with that. Like, yeah, let's ignore that part and go to because what happens, he gets to London, finds her. Well, he doesn't find her. He gets mistaken for her. And this is one of the things I liked is the fact that we're gender switching. We're even kind of gender flipping on the who's ghosting who part because often, you know, you see men being ghosted or ghosting women because they're too needy. So you've got needy man versus needy woman and a little bit of a cold woman who's kind of disinterested or like moderately interested, but just is a little more aloof in her emotion.
Right. She is career focused. She doesn't have time for this right now.
Exactly. And also they are playing on the fact that the entire villainous world of this movie cannot get it through their head that the tax man could be a woman, which then instigates a lot of comedy. And that amuses me because it's just she slides under the radar because she must be a he.
Right. And it just in her indignation of the fact that the bad guys think that he is the tax man, like him. Mm-hmm. This soft farmer guy carrying a cactus and his carry-on luggage with him as he's running through the underground tunnels could possibly be this international super spy. Just like it just kills her, just absolutely kills her, which I found that part to be very amusing. It's like I can't even get the respect because of my gender of like my enemies, like they think you're me.
With for no reason, honestly, other than he just happens to stroll into the wrong area at the wrong time. There's no reason that he is suspected to be like the tax man. So it is just this ridiculous premise that gets played with throughout.
But I do love, you know, I do love the gender switching of this is he is the damsel in this story. Like he is the one that's going to need to be rescued. She has to pull out all of the stops to protect him from getting killed because he has no skills. He did have the what did they say? He was a wrestler. So they set that up like really early. So you do see him at one point getting physical with
like, I think when they're on the airplane and he does pull a wrestling move, you're like, all right. So they telegraph that, but he doesn't ever come across as like, okay, like I'm a super fighter. Like I'm like, I can punch somebody out now or do anything. Like he is very ineffectual in most of their action scenes where mm-hmm. anything that happens is by dumb luck. Like he just doesn't all of a sudden like hetero man it up and become you know, like I will save you little lady sort of thing. Like no, he is scared spitless and just, you know, is counting on her to get them out of it. So I do like that gender flipping. It's been done before, but I do like the sort of the trope flipping in this, and that it kept me entertained and it kept me amused throughout this because she's just so mad that he's there, which she should be. Like he stalked her there. Like, what are you doing? But you know, you can see the relationship developing just a little bit, but it takes a little bit more time because she's just so mad at him. And I'm like, yes, you just don't acknowledge that this was a grand gesture. This was stupid. And it has your stupidity has consequences. And now I got to fix this. So, yeah, she doesn't let him off the hook for a while.
She definitely needs to deal with that fallout because whatever her plan was is now greatly complicated. I also enjoy the fact that he, like you said, he can throw a punch, or he says he can shoot a gun, but he's been shooting at cans, right? So it comes up, well, shoot the gun. He's like, I can't kill someone. I don't know how to do that. I could wrestle someone, but I don't know how to punch someone in real life, right? Because that's a different thing to be in a wrestling match versus actually like physically fighting for your life or at least to injure someone, which is, again, that's not usually how it's played. And it amused me.
Yeah, it was. There was parts of this movie and it was a ride. Like once you got past sort of that uncomfortable bit that we had mentioned that we're never going to mention again, the action scenes in this were, you know, engaging. It was very entertaining. You were wondering how they were going to get out of this. The plot gets convoluted. Adrian Brody shows up. You know, there's a box. Who cares about the box? But it's the box that has to be open sort of thing. Like, it's just this big sort of MacGuffin. But it is entertaining in a way that Marvel movies are entertaining in that they are so completely unrealistic. The action scenes in this are heightened beyond belief. The chase scenes are heightened beyond belief. I mean, even more so than a Bond film, I think, or kind of on par with some of the more extravagant Bond scenes. But you kind of know what you're getting into when you once you hit a certain point in this, you're like, okay, this is a Marvel rom-com basically. And they lean into that a little bit with all the guest stars sort of in the middle of the taxi scene when they're trying to, they're in the market and they have to, I don't even know what they were doing. Like the logic of this movie is, it doesn't matter. Like it just doesn't matter. But they're trying to, you know, get someplace. So they're in a cab and her ex-lover gets shot. And there's a number of guest stars that come in that are going to capture them for the bounty. And it's like, you know, Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan, like all of Chris Evans' co-stars in the Marvel series of movies, like pop in. And it's so funny. It's just like so freaking entertaining. But I think once you suspend your belief and it becomes a whole different movie. And then that's when it got really fun. Because anything could happen. I would be fine with it because I knew the type of movie I was watching at that point. And I think there is a little bit of a break that you get from sort of a very traditional rom-com, sort of uncomfortable rom-com, to this very action-y kind of movie that ends up with a little bit of romance. And that's when I started like just really leaning into it because I'm like, you could be walking on the wing of an airplane right now. I'd be like, yeah, I guess that's a thing because I knew what I was watching.
Well, I think because you get the villains, like Brody's character, it's like he's a parody of a villain. Like he is not, you know, everyone, it's just so amped up that you can't take it seriously. And it's sort of like what I said previously around time travel movies, that sometimes mm-hmm. you have to like go along for the ride, because if you start thinking about it too much, nothing will make sense. And as you said, there's this, I finished watching it not that long ago and I don't really remember what was in the box. I can't remember some weapon in box.
It was like a passcode to release some sort of, was it a bioweapon or something? I don't even
know. It was a bioweapon.
It doesn't matter.
And you needed a 4-part passcode to right. which creates enough of a barrier that everyone's chasing everyone around to get this box and the passcode. And apparently
right.
Chris Evans has the passcode, which of course he doesn't.
He figured it out.
Which I love.
I love that, because it just goes back to his, I am this nerdy guy who loves agriculture and plants, and I recognize that plant that is on the windowsill of the agent that the Sadie had to kill way back when, who had the coat, whatever the thing. Like, he recognized that it was the DNA sequencing of that. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's so cute that like he's bringing in like his little, you know, his hobby, his knowledge into this international spy CIA situation, and he's the one that cracked the code. Mm-hmm. And again, it was a plant, which I thought was kind of clever. But yeah, this is like everything in this movie is so way over the top, like way over the top. When you get to the end where that revolving restaurant is just going like a million miles an hour, and there's gravity doesn't work like that. Physics does not work like that. No. But at that point, you are so leaning in to the over topness of it. You're just along for the ride and you don't even care. You just don't even care. She looks amazing. He looks amazing. It's yeah. really cool. So
my notes, just Chris's blue suit. That's all.
She walks in with the dress and what mm-hmm. song was playing? Because I remember saying like that was like the perfect entrance music for her, because yeah. I did really enjoy the music that they used throughout this. And as she comes walking in, oh my God, I didn't take a note of what song it was, but I just remember thinking, oh my God, like she looks amazing in that dress and that music is just perfect.
Well, and leading up to that, you go into this final confrontation and you have these three CIA agents in Chris's ear. Mm-hmm. I suppose we should call him Cole, ready to help him. And it made me laugh when the villains just opened the door of the van, shot them all dead.
Just like shot them all.
And yeah, it's like, okay, so he's on his own now. And he's sitting there going like, I know she's going to come. I know she's going to come. And that just to me was adorable that he had some faith in her, but also made that scene more interesting, because it's just like, there's no safety blanket, rope, anything for you. You're on your own.
Right. And you have no idea what you're doing. Like, no, you're not bluffing your way out of this. You have no clue. Like, he had no skills, nothing. It was like she was the only thing that he could possibly hope for to get him out of that situation alive. But that restaurant scene was just so good when she put the bounty out.
Yes.
And like all of the waiters, I guess she put like $1 million bounty out on one of the people at the table. And
it was 10 million. Character? Yeah, it was $10 million. And she had them give her $10 million, which then she could immediately use to put a hit out on them, which is just so silly. And funny.
It's so silly, but it was just the whole setup of everybody's phone in the restaurant, all the waiters' phones going off and everybody pulling guns out. Like, it was the ultimate chaos. And it just was really, really funny and entertaining. Like I said, at that point, like, you're just whatever. Whatever's going to happen next, I'm good. Like, it's the fact that that many bounty hunters are working in food service in Washington, D.C.
Well, they all came up with the exact same plan
right.
to do this. And the fact that the revolving restaurant gets faster and faster and turns into some yes. sort of carnival ride. And like, one, you knew at some point windows were going to break. Someone has to fall through. Two, someone also has to be, you don't show gears like that without someone being squished in the middle of them.
Telegraphing it. You knew that was coming.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming.
Like, this is not a movie that's going to, like, it kind of does surprise you, but also doesn't surprise you at all. Like, you're just like, of course, that's exactly
yeah.
what's going to happen.
I think the only there you're right. There, it doesn't surprise you because you're open for anything. Like at some point, mm-hmm. you just tie your belief on a little red balloon and let it go, float up in the air, and just say, all right, bring it on. How are we bringing this one home? Like, how are we bringing, what is going to be the happy ending here? Because there's going to be a happy ending. Like, how are we going to get there? Because this is, I mean, there's a whole scene on a desert island. We didn't even talk about that. Where
right.
Like crashes. No, they jump out of the airplane. Oh my gosh. And they wake up on this desert island where he heals her from her gunshot wound. Or was it a stab wound? She stabbed or shot on the plane.
I can't remember. But yeah, she was injured.
She's wounded. And he like cures her with plants.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
adorable.
Telegraphing his knowledge of, you know, what he really wants to do, which is write books about agriculture and horticulture and ancient plants. I don't know what he wants to do, but he cures her with plants. And then there's this whole, do I save her? Do I save the box? Do I save her? Do I save the codes? And it's just so ridiculous. And I loved it so much.
Well, and I think the implication too is that he set up the little, like little hut mm-hmm. shelter and made everything all nice for them to have like a few reprieve of a few minutes where we actually get a little character and relationship development to make some ground on that romance.
They've stopped running for just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, they're sitting under a parachute on a beach and she's, you know, bleeding from a side wound. But this is a man who has made forts in his life. You know,
yes.
This is definitely a fort guy. He knows yes. what he's doing.
Probably tree houses out at the farm.
Absolutely.
I also enjoyed, I like you, like many of us, I don't love chase scenes that go on too long or fight scenes that go on too long. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy the bus scene where they're
yes.
going in that bus coming out of the cave system, which I'm again jumping backwards. Mm-hmm. But that bus should not have been as good at driving as it was, which is mm-hmm. also just ridiculous. But I've been on that bus. I traveled to Nepal in my younger years and we took a bus from Kathmandu to the Annapurna Sanctuary hike. And you have to go in that bus up a narrow dirt road over top into the next valley. And there's a sheer cliff like that along the side. And I driving at regular speed or like having to pass people on this narrow road and everything. It was the most terrifying bus ride of my entire life. Oh my and God. I could see that there was a not zero chance of tipping over down like just one wrong move. And because it got pretty tight and I was sitting on the side that right by the cliff. I'm like, we could actually die drinking this bus ride and tumble down a cliff of a mountain. So that one brought back that memory and also amped up the stress I was feeling about that car chase.
It was a very claustrophobic mm-hmm. scene. And I think the one thing that made it a little bit more palpable was the fact that it was a chase scene and a fight scene at the same time.
Yes.
So, you know, you kind of flip between the action of, and it was also the scene where Chris Evans is finally realizing the person that he went on the date with.
Like, yes.
This is the first time he sees her in action. I mean, yes, yeah, she's rescued him and they've gotten out of this situation, but like the level of her skills, not only driving, but shooting, fighting, punching. I mean, she's doing it all. And he's just hanging on as the dawning realization of, not just an art curator here. Like she's got a lot going on. So that kind of made it less dull for me because I do tend to be like, okay, looking at my watch, like, are we done yet? Like even during the most recent Indiana Jones, like, are we done yet with this chase scene? Like
the tuk-tuk chase scene.
Yeah.
Way too long.
The only thing that was interesting in that chase scene was the fact that she was having an argument with her ex-boyfriend at mm-hmm. the same time. And you got that little bit of character development. The rest of it, like, throw it in the trash. I don't know whether it's I'm just getting older and bored with it or I've just seen so many chase scenes. Like,
I think it is because often they are special effects led. And what I am interested in both fight scenes and chase scenes is the character development. So like if you spend and get, like sometimes 10 minutes building up this, I'm sure it is incredible. And people put a lot of effort into making this and same with this bus scene, same with the whirling around in the final restaurant. Like those are very heavy special effects driven scenes. What made them more interesting, like you said, is there is character development happening in there. Like we're seeing one, Sadie's skills, two, Cole having his realization, and also trying to do some things and being a little more successful in the final scene than he is. But I do love in, like, even when he is successful at kind of fighting, it is very by chance or he's not that good. He's not a spy.
No, he's taking advantage of a situation. Like, yeah. Oh, there's an open door. I can push this guy out sort of thing. Like, not the fact that let me maneuver this into a position where I can be effective. It's exactly. Taking advantage of a situation. Yeah.
But they're also having little fights. And like in the bus scene, you're seeing the little cactus roll around, which is mm-hmm. was a funny little motif, was this stupid little cactus. Makes it through the whole movie, right? So,
well, you know, like he said, they're indestructible. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect plant for her, literally.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely I'm going on a ride sort of film. And but you know, we were talking, you know, off air about Hallmark films, which
yes,
my husband is a huge fan. It's like background noise all the time. And I'm looking at this and saying, if you can suspend your belief that the bank owner is all of a sudden going to hire you and put on this concert that's going to save the town, and oh, by the way, that gentleman driving around in the pickup truck is actually Santa Claus. Like if you can lean into that, you can lean into this. Other than that problematic part in the middle, we'll just throw mm-hmm. that whole part in the trash.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's sort of an amped up Hallmark film, because you have the cute farmer, you have the farmer's market, you have the meet cute, and then it just goes in a whole different direction. but yeah, like it was a refreshing antidote, or refreshing contrast, I should say, not antidote, to sort of the very saccharine, sweet, romantic comedies that are, you know, on several beloved cable channels at the moment. On repeat all the time, constantly. And it is also, you know, it seems like there's, you know, we have the Hallmark-esque sort of rom-coms, and then you have like some really, you know, more leaning into the inappropriate, whether language-wise or, you know, a little raunchier rom-coms that, you know, we've gotten a little more R-rated.
Yeah.
And you know, having an action rom-com is actually kind of refreshing. Like, I'm here for more of the action rom-coms, and they can be just as unbelievable as all of the rest of them. And I think that's okay. We can leave the stalkery bits out though.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's because an action rom-com requires more of a budget than a typical rom-com that makes them a little more rare.
True. Like they don't have a whole town set up like in Canada someplace where they just go and film. Hallmark Townville. I think you're right. It definitely, I mean, you could see the budget here. You could see where the money was being spent and the special effects and everything else. You know, Apple did it well. Not to everybody's pleasure, I'm sure. Like this is more of the romantic comedy. Like this is the kind of rom-com that I would enjoy more of, mm-hmm. because it had, you know, it just, the pace was good. It was fast, and it just felt different enough that it felt refreshing to me.
And also off air, I was telling you, cause we have done an episode about the Lost City with Sandra Bullock and mm-hmm. Channing Tatum. Did I get that one right?
Believe it is Channing. Two last names. It's always
confusing. I know. And when I recorded the episode, Kirsten kept making fun of me because I could not get his name straight. I'm so sorry. Channing Tatum. But I think that The Lost City is a better plotted, better constructed movie. And for you, who you were on our Romancing the Stone episode, and so I know we both really like Romancing the Stone, and it was an ode to that. And so it brought in sort of an awareness of the history of the action romance, and it effectively, I think, delivered it in a more consistent, well-plotted, like, plot. I remember the plot. And so I would say that one is better. I'm not going to say no to Ghosted, just because I kind of like that. And I am at a point in my life where I just like things to be light and fluffy, where I don't have to think too hard. So it suits my mood.
Yeah, sometimes, like, Succession, amazing program. Like, I just don't want to put that time and angst into something right now at this point in my life. You know what I mean?
I've purposely not watched it because it just seems way too serious and too, like, too intense. And I'm like, I can't do it.
Right. So, I'm the same way. And I know people find that sort of television cathartic, because it takes the emotions of what they're dealing with in their real life and sort of, you know, gives them an outlet to cleanse the pores, so to speak. I'm not that person. I know people like that, and I respect that, but I am not that person. Like, when I sit down to consume some sort of media, like, I want something that, you know, sometimes I want to be a little thinky about it, but sometimes I just really want to be entertained. Like, I want to be amused. I don't want to have to, even though I'm sitting here on a podcast analyzing this movie, I don't want to have to sit and analyze it afterwards. Just like, I want to eat some popcorn. It's like last summer going to the theater and watching the second Top Gun movie. Like, it wasn't great theater, but my gosh, was it fun? Like, and sometimes that's all you need. It doesn't have to be, you know, part 37 of a multi-billion dollar franchise. I'm looking at you, Star Wars and Marvel. Mm-hmm. Like, it can just be a fun movie. Where did those go? Where did they go?
Yes, and I would love for this not to have a sequel.
Oh, 100%. Like, let's just end it.
Yeah, like, just have one and done. Doesn't need to be a sequel. I don't need another part to it. Go tell me a different story with a different bunch of characters. Don't make me remember 12 things, even though we recently talked about The Terminator, which I do watch all the sequels and I like it. But there's something to be said for a one and done movie that you go in, you watch it, and I have a good time.
Especially a movie that is, its only purpose is entertainment.
Yeah.
Its only purpose is there. It's not that deep. Do you know what I mean? They're not trying to make they're not trying to make a social message here, because if they did, it's not the right one. You know what I mean? They're not trying to educate. They're not trying to create art. They're just trying to create some fun. And there's definitely a place for that. I'm the audience. It's me. Hi. Cater to me a little bit more.
I don't even think they're trying to make a commentary on, like, romance or relationships. Like, there is no depth to their interactions or them coming together. They just, like, we kind of like each other. Oh, we misunderstood each other. Oh, now we kind of like each other again. There's no depth in that relationship or how it develops.
Nope. It's pretty people shooting things and having adventures.
Yep. That's all we need. Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just want to watch things blow up, and it's okay.
Or see the villain fly out of a rotating restaurant.
Or get crushed in between giant gears, even though we really didn't see it happen.
We didn't see it. I actually really appreciated that they did not show us that. It is not that kind of movie. We don't see an in-depth sex scene. We also do not see people getting smushed by giant gears.
You don't see, you know, bloody gears. Yeah. Like, you don't see any of it. It's great. It's really not graphic. Even the guy that, oh my God, they kill with the bugs. Like, you don't see it. They walk away. Like, yeah. I was really squicked out by that scene. There's a part in the movie where if you're bug phobic, like, have your finger on the fast forward, because there is a scene where they basically have a torture chamber sort of thing in the mountains, and it's all bug focused on what these bugs can do to you, and they actually kill somebody with the bugs. And, you know, but they didn't show it. You just heard the guy scream in the background, which I appreciated. You don't even see the bugs crawl on him. But yeah, if that is if that is a major squick of yours, like there's going to be times you're going to want to fast forward a lot in that. So, but yeah, it's, I, it was a ride and I had a good time. My husband didn't enjoy it as much as I did. I think it was not quite Hallmark enough for him, but you know, it's the cross I must bear in this marriage.
That's okay. Cause my husband would not watch it with me because it is not serious enough. So he would rather watch things like Succession or Deep. Serious. Yeah. So we don't always watch things together because I just don't want to watch. I'm like too serious. I used to watch more things, serious things when I was younger. And now I just, I'm like, no, that's too serious. Make me laugh.
I'm not at the think piece stage of my life. You know what I mean? Like I'm not here to see what's going to be in the Atlantic about this show. Like just, I mean, maybe I'll get there again, but I kind of need a minute. There's too much of that in the real world. I can't take it in my fictional entertainment world as well.
Yeah, I feel it. It's like life gets too serious sometimes. Just take me away. Give me some escapism.
Put me in a revolving restaurant going 75 miles an hour, 20 stories high, and see what happens in a really, really good dress and a good suit.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait. I do not think there is much more we really need to say about this movie. So I will give you a chance to say final thoughts.
I think we have probably put more thought into this movie than anybody else has because it's not that. It's just not that. I do think I did like his parents.
Yes.
Yeah, that was very funny. You know, the scene at the end was kind of cute. I did like the fact that he's, you know, he's kind of leaning into her career a little bit and it's not, you know, this is way too dangerous. Like, you know, we can't have a relationship if you're going to be off doing that. It's like, nope, she's off being spy and he's off doing his research. And I think, you know, I like the fact that it ended up where they're both leaning into the thing that they love because she likes being a spy. Like she wasn't forced into this at all. You know, she enjoys it. This isn't deep, but it's fun.
She pushes him to doing what he wants, right?
Yeah. Like she makes him a better person.
Yep.
And he accepts her for who she is and appreciates her for who she is. And honestly, what more do you want out of a rom-com?
This is as much depth as we need in a movie like this.
100%.
Yeah. Seeing them happily ever after. In another set of good outfits.
Yes. It, you know, we talked about in another podcast, True Lies. It was giving me a little bit of the final True Lies vibe, the final scene when, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis and Arnold Schwarzenegger are more partners in the business, you know, and they're doing that tango scene, trying to figure out who the mark is and how they're going to get to him. It had a little bit of that vibe, but much softer. Mm-hmm. And much more, oh, you're going to go do your thing and whatever you need from me is fine. But they definitely, I think there was a little bit of an homage there.
Yeah. You're going to, like, we're going to end up watching True Lies again, aren't we?
I both really want to and really don't. I know. Let's talk about some problematic bits.
I know. Oof.
But that movie has the, you know, that was made a long time ago.
It was
like this movie was made like last year. I don't know when it was filmed, but recently, and you still have all these really creepy bits.
Like, yeah, it should have done better on that.
It should have done.
Yeah, I feel like if I was willing to put some work into it, which I have not and am not, we could come up with a better reason to push them together after being ghosted, because I like the ghosted concept. One that was a little less stalkering.
Yeah, like if she had maybe responded once or twice. And I don't know. I don't know that there's a way to work your way out of this without having him come across as still kind of creepy. But yeah. It's Chris Evans. Like, like you said, that gives him a whole lot of runway. Just being Chris Evans, wearing soft flannels and his little beard.
My final thought is just going to be like thinking about him in that nice blue suit. That's all.
That's it.
That's it. That's all the thought I'm going to put into it.
That's the depth of this film. Pretty people being pretty and shooting things and driving fast.
Exactly. So we will leave it there and go on our merry way. Hopefully not on a scary bus.
No, I'm not on that bus.
So thank you for joining me on this very frivolous ride.
It was very frivolous, but do I regret watching it? No. Will I watch it again? Neither. Possibly. If maybe. It's, it's right there and I'm in the mood, I might do that because it is entertaining. But yeah, it was fun, but there's no nutrition.
No. And I'll whisper, The Lost City. The Lost City. Just can't go watch wait. Lost. Yeah. And then we'll report back.
We'll do that. 100%.
Yes. So that is where we will leave you, listeners. And until next time, stay safe, agents.
Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of the Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon.